call the Civil Law Committee to order. Quorum is present. Representative Hilty, you want to move the minutes for the last meeting?
I'd be glad to do that, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Representative Hilty moves the approval of the February 22nd, 2012 meeting. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Approve, or oppose, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Swazinski, you've got your house file up. Welcome to our committee. Go ahead and present your committee, and we have one testifier, or how many do you have?
Yes, we have one testifier, Bob Krogman, from the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association.
Okay, very good. Good. The chair will, what's the house? Excuse me. The chair will move House File 2333 to be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. And I understand you have an amendment. Do you want to just get that in the shape?
Yes.
You desire first?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have A1 amendment.
Representative Druskowski will move the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Briefly, what's it do, Representative Druskowski?
The amendment simply changes some of the language where we have may and insert recognized by Internal Revenue Service as a 501c6 exempt organization. The reason for the change in the amendment to the original bill was conversations with members of the Senate felt that we really wanted to narrow the scope of the trade association and the way it was compiled so that we could kind of make sure that we have the true meaning of exactly what we want to have done by the association we are working with this bill.
Okay. Any discussion on the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, this bill was initially referred to the Public Safety Committee, in which I serve, and the bill was pretty thoroughly vetted there. This amendment was, we proposed to add this amendment in that committee, but actually Representative Smith got a little snarky, and so it was delayed to this committee, but it's a good amendment, and I recommend that we pass it.
Very good. All those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. It passes 3-0. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Got to speak up.
House File 2333 is really quite simply a non-controversial bill. It helps small businesses in our local communities by streamlining the process to collect money for motor fuel drive-offs. It prescribes that the trade association, acting on behalf of member retailers, may serve notice and collect payments within the current collection statutes. This bill helps local law enforcement with their ability to permit and work with the case law to help with the fact finder in drive-off cases to infer that the driver of that motor vehicle indeed intended and to deprive the owner of the small business of payment for that fuel. This is kind of a portion of the bill that probably has the most conversation in it. This allows for situations to really, because of the physical nature of fuel, it allows police to make some inference in there on theft and presumed ownership. So with that, I would like to have Bob Krogman from the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association to speak on behalf of the bill.
Mr. Krogman, welcome to our committee. You're a veteran at this, but as you know, you need to identify yourself for the taped record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Krogman. I'm with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association, which is a trade association that represents about 700 small oil companies around the state. They deliver fuel to farmers, heating oil, contractors, construction companies. They also own and operate about 2,000 of the state's 3,500 convenience stores and service stations. The, as Representative Swedensky said, the first part of this bill would allow a trade association to send out notices and collect from the people who drive off without paying as defined in the civil statute 604.15. And we could only do that as is stated in there, which is a notice of non-payment. The reason we think this is important is that many, many of the drive-offs are mistakes. Folks don't intend to drive off, they do. In talking to several legislators about this bill, I heard stories from most of themselves, wife, brother, sister, somebody inadvertently driving off. And this method allows send out a notice, and people who are doing it, about 50% paid based on that letter. So they obviously were mistakes. To send out that notice, you'd have to have the license plate information. And to get that, you have to go to the Department of Motor Vehicles. Of course, the Department of Motor Vehicles is not going to send out addresses and everything based on license plate numbers to everybody. They send it to us now based on a contract we signed with them. And we then send it on to the owner of the store, and they agree not to use that in anything, any other way than sending out the notice of payment. There also is in here, in the 604, a notice of dispute, which simply says that if somebody disputes that they didn't drive off, we have to stop, or the retailer has to stop, all collection activities. Can't go anymore, can't turn it to a collection agency, can't do anything. And we strongly support that and want that there because of mistakes, because of inadvertent drive-off. We don't want to criminalize folks who simply made a mistake, as long as they pay. And with that, we would make it more expeditious and more efficient since we get the license plate information simply to send out the notice of payment, and if we get paid, send it to the members. Our smallest members, those are 1 to 3 stores, tell us they currently don't do that because of the way this is set up, they're afraid of getting out away too far from it. So they said if we could do it, it'd really be helpful. That's the reason for that portion. The next portion was drafted by Senate Counsel. It talks about fact finder can infer that the driver acted intentionally without payment of right, and the driver intended to deprive the retailer permanently of possession of the fuel. I think the best way I can explain this is the example. By the way, that permissive inference is already in statute in two different sections. 609.672, permissive inference, firearms and automobiles. 152.028, permissive inference of knowing possession of drugs, controlled substances. The best example, or an example of explaining this, is that let's say there's a camper drives off without paying for 100 gallons of diesel fuel. The location, got the license plate number, and a good description of the camper. Down the road, he gets pulled over by the highway patrol or the police, and the fact finder, the policeman, could infer that he intentionally drove off because it's the right license plate number, it's the right camper, and his tank is full. He could infer that he intended to drive off in that instance. Rebuttal would be to pay for the fuel. Or, if in fact one of the facts was wrong, my tank is empty, that would also rebut. Mr. Chairman, I think that's pretty much. I'd answer any questions that I can.
Thank you, Mr. Krogman. Representative Mahoney, then Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Swazinski. How did you come out on that last drive off?
You have the right to remain silent and
unintentional.
Is that your question, Representative Mahoney?
Yeah.
You're done.
Not before you started, Mr.
You're right. I represent Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I spoke with folks yesterday about this, proponents. There's some really hairy areas you get into when you allow for permissive inferences in this case, constitutional issues and everything. However, I think that's abrogated by the fact that you get 30 days to show it. So if, in fact, it was incorrectly inferred by law enforcement, you can say, well, you know, I'll just pay it in 30 days and I'll be okay. I still have problems with that from a constitutional perspective, but I think it's taken care of by one of the two affirmative defenses that they have stated here. But that said, I have a major problem with the way this bill is drafted, and I mentioned this yesterday. I don't understand why motor fuel theft should be included in every jury instruction for theft in the state of Minnesota, because it's in the first parens, which is the general prohibition that you can't steal. The subsequent 16 parens include other things that, oh yeah, by the way, this includes you can't steal cable or fill out a claim for reimbursement for providing treatment or supplies, etc. So I would like to make an amendment, Mr. Chair, if I can, and I don't know if, but let me explain it first. It is after the word property on line 4.20 to strike the new language and place it where it should rightfully belong, in with the other sections of other things which also happen to be theft by definition in Minnesota statutes, and that would be line 8.4 before the effective date. Reinsert the stricken language, which includes the prohibition against stealing motor fuel, and then also the second paragraph, lines 4.23 to 4.29, which includes a permissive inference as well as the two named affirmative defenses. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes it a lot cleaner, and it also wouldn't put prosecutors in a position of having to include motor vehicle fuel theft in every jury instruction for stealing an ugly leisure suit from Walmart, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. You want to move that oral amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair. And I can re-explain it.
Why don't I ask our counsel if he understands it, and then maybe can repeat it back to the committee. Mr. Gearing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blesch, maybe you can restate the amendment.
Sure. It would remove the new language on lines after the word property on line 4.20 to the end of the new language, the number 5, I guess it would be, yeah, the number 5 on line 4.29, and it would reinsert that language on line 8.4 before the words effective date, and renumber those sections accordingly. So this then would be parens 18 of an additional crime of theft that we now have. The general prohibition, which is included, it would be 18 separate sections of what are expressly theft in the state of Minnesota, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Mr. Gearing, do you have that oral amendment? Or do you need a little time to?
Mr. Chair, it might be helpful just to take a few minutes to make sure that it all kind of fits together that way. So
okay.
There's other discussion that might be.
Let's do Representative Lesch, are you okay? We'll come to it before.
Yes, Mr.
Chair. Mr. Gearing, we temporarily withdraw it, and then we'll just come back to you?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Very good. Any other discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
Before you temporarily withdraw it, could you maybe get the witness or the author of the bill to comment on it a little bit while Mr. Gearing is working on it a little bit, so we know how the author feels about it?
We can. I want to make sure they know what we're doing for sure. But Mr. Representative Swazinski, do you have any comment on the discussion we had with Representative Lesch? And then,
yes, Mr. Chair, it is my understanding. I don't believe that will change the outline meaning of the bill if we simply pull it out of section six and then place it into the back portion of this. In visiting with council, you know, I think if that is something we're comfortable with, we are comfortable with it. So. Okay. But moving forward, obviously we can continue this conversation before it meets its next committee. So I think we're generally good and willing to move forward. So,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hellstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would really hope that we get it right in this committee before we pass it on, because this could have a major impact, even if you have to lay it over and get it drafted and let the next bill go. I think this really is just a drafting.
And Representative Hellstrom, I'm contemplating that, too. If there's no more discussion, I do have a question, but do you have a Representative Hillstrom, anything else? Any other questions, members? Representative Swazinski, I just want to kind of confirm my understanding and reading of it. Essentially, you're wanting to allow a trade association to do the work if a local business owner doesn't do it themselves now, or doesn't have the time, or chooses to have somebody else to do it. And the inadvertent drive-off has a remedy before you really get into a lot of fines and penalties. Is that correct? Those two questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So, you know, the way the business works, oftentimes you have a teller behind the booth before they press the button to start allowing the fuel. They are usually under the direction to have some sort of a mechanism to record the license plate number and the make and potential model of the vehicle. And then, assuming that the fuel is not paid for, the owner would simply contact the trade association, pass on the general information to them. The trade association would work on their behalf with the Department of Corrections, do the tracing, figure out who that individual is, simply write them a letter in a courteous manner, of course, stating about the situation that occurred, and then would be able to either collect those funds at that time, or after a period of 30 days, would be able to infer that action was not by accident, but therefore on purpose, and move forward into a different direction. So, and that the and the reason for that is there's going to be a minimum fee potentially charged to those the customers, so the individual business owners from this trade association to do that service. And that's where that the amendment came from, the original A1. So we got rid of May and recognized with Internal Revenue Service, and that would allow the trade association that is kind of heading behind this bill to, instead of allowing just some business to kind of pop up and offer this service, that they're really truly doing as a service and not necessarily trying to go after it. So
okay. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Swazinski. This is a good bill. I really like the bill. The one question I have is the 30-day time period that they have to respond to the letter. Is there any insurance or any how do we ensure that they received the letter? Have you thought about that at all, or is there, you know, there could be a situation where you send it to their last known address, and in the meantime they've moved to another state or somewhere else and maybe didn't do a forward. Is that inherent in here somehow, or is there a way to consider that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Druskowski, I'm going to pass that on to Mr. Krogman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is in the existing civil statute says that an affidavit of service by mailing must be retained by the retailer, which of course would be filled out to show that it was mailed. And the notice of dispute essentially takes care of that. If someone doesn't receive the mailing, or then therefore doesn't make payment, the retailer has a couple of options. He can take it to small claims court, conciliation court, or he can turn it over to the police. There's nothing the retailer could do from a, let's say, a typical collection agency perspective, because there are not collection agencies. There would be no skip trace or anything like that. the response, or if you did write back and say, I didn't do it, the response would be the same. The retailer could go to conciliation court or report it to the police based on the information. And sometimes that information, somebody might transpose a number and a license plate, something like that. That sorts it all out without pulling somebody into court.
Follow up? Good. Representative Lesh? And then members, I think Mr. Gehring ran up to just draft this quickly, so we'll lay the bill over until he gets back and go to Representative Coonan.
Oh, you're still Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, can you tell me, so I the reason I'm wondering about this, I was in the city attorney's office back in December, and I got a random call from the boss saying you need to draft up a memo on what makes stealing gas illegal in Minnesota, and it was just simply the general prohibition, you can't steal stuff. Do you have experience with those prosecutions, and have you had problems with those, or do you know people in your trade association that have tried to take that criminal route? Do you think of any examples?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, we have not. We are not involved in this because we were told right now for us to do that member service, we would have to become a collection agency. We'd have to change our IRS for-profit status. We would have to get licensed, and we'd have to post a bond. And that's why we haven't done what we're talking with this member service we're talking about. This would allow us to do it without becoming a collection agency. But in talking to our members, very few of these go to prosecution, simply because you may have the license plate number, but you can't identify the driver, and the car couldn't commit the crime. That's why there's the civil action here. So the ones that do go to prosecution is where they're caught very quickly, because gasoline theft is kind of a unique theft. Example I used in the other committee was that going to a liquor store and put a high-end bottle of whiskey under your coat and walk out, you get caught outside, the bottle of whiskey's there. But gasoline, it goes into the tank owned by that person. We can't take it out, and if we could, we couldn't fingerprint it that it came from that station. So we have no stolen item to say here. What we have is an electronic record. That POS system has an electronic record of every sale. That corresponding to the driver's or to the license plate number is what we work off.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you for that. And the reason I asked is I prosecuted probably tens of thousands of cases. And I can't recall a single one where I prosecuted a gas station drive-off, and I wasn't sure why. And also, I hearken back. The only one that compared was this guy up on Snelling and Marshall, who was marking his gas as premium when it wasn't premium octane. State law, believe it or not, requires that if you say premium on there, it has to be at least, I think, 91 or 92 octane. It was 89. So I prosecuted that guy. He was an interesting character. But you've got, I don't know if your organization is responsible for the stickers on the gas pumps that have the cop say, pay now or you will pay later, and he's wagging his finger. Well, you know, he's not a very intimidating looking cop. He's got these big Coke bottle glasses, and I'm like, whatever, I'll drive off. No, I wouldn't, but anyway.
What did you do on your last drive?
Just a suggestion. Yeah, exactly. You cover the license plate, Representative Mahoney. Jeez.
Oh, my.
To your point, Representative Lesh. Mr. Gehring? Oh, he did. Okay. Any other discussion? Otherwise, I'm going to lay it over. Representative Swazinski, can you... stick around if we lay it over temporarily. Representative Holberg has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Krogman, is your association going to have access to the same amount of data that the retailer will?
Mr. Krogman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, Yes, we will, because as I said a little bit earlier, right now we supply the information to them under contract with the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Okay.
Okay, the chair will lay over House File 2333 temporarily. Thank you, Representative Swazinski. I'm going to ask Representative Coonan to come forward, and we'll deal with his bill and then bring yours back up, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Coonan. Representative Coonan, welcome to our committee. Representative Joskowski will move House File 578. House File 578 be recommended to pass and re-referred to Transportation Committee. Find out, we'll fix it. Representative Coonan, I'll let you present. Do you have any other testifiers? And members, we heard this in the working group this fall that some of you attended. We fleshed out several of the issues there. Representative Coonan, do you have any testifiers? Because I do plan to limit the testimony to about 15 or 20 minutes for each side and then have questions, but I'm not sure aware of any that you have today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thank you for giving me time to present the bill. And no, I do not have testifiers today.
You don't? Okay.
This bill was brought to Senator Tooley and I by Mr. Dennis Larson, and he would have liked to have been here but was unable to be here today.
Right. So I'll let you present, and then there's three persons that have asked to testify in opposition. For those of you that are here for that, I will ask you to coordinate your testimony, and we will not exceed 20 minutes of opposition testimony and then questions for the committee. So, Representative Coonan, why don't you give us a background, give the committee a background of the bill and the issue that this will deal with, and then we'll take testimony and further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee members. Like I said earlier, Mr. Dennis Larson brought this bill to Senator Kubley and I, and it was for a situation that he ran into with some land that he owns. He felt that a portion of the easement, and this was a MnDOT easement, he felt that a portion of the land that he owned that had this easement on it wasn't being used for the purpose of which the easement was placed on this portion of land. And so he found out that in law, if there's an easement that isn't being used for the purpose of which it was originally intended, that the landowner can apply to the district court and bring the case to the court and have the court decide if that easement would be discharged or not. But in a case of a portion of the easement that wasn't written into statute, and if you look at the bill, you'll see new language there that's added that says or portion of an easement. And what that would do is, in a case like Mr. Larson's, would allow him to apply to the district court the same as somebody who has an entire easement, and apply to the court and have the court listen to both sides of the issue and decide if that portion of an easement should be discharged. And so pretty much that's what the bill does. It makes that one change. It still allows an entire easement to be brought to the district court, and also now, if this were to pass, would allow a portion of an easement also to be brought to the district court.
Thank you, Representative Coonan. Representative Coonan, I think you're aware of the A5 amendment that I've discussed with you. Maybe for the discussion of the next testifiers, I would like to just move the A5 amendment to change the bill or modify it accordingly. At this time, I'd move the A5 amendment. And Representative Coonan, if you can respond, I think you're aware of it. Is that you're okay with that language?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes, and you know, I'll leave it to the committee to decide what to do on this one. I don't have an opinion on this one today. So.
And members, the A5 amendment, what it specifically does, part of the land that Representative Coonan addressed, and we heard in the working group, is on the edge of the highway along a lake that has. Over time became a first a user developed beach, but now a beach in Douglas County. I want to be clear that the intent is not to discharge the beach. Mr. Larson has told us also that he doesn't have an intention or a desire to take any of the beach back, and so this language would just set that forth, that even though there's been a limited use permit and there could be a question of whether that use of a beach is in the spirit or in the purpose of the original easement that was taken for highway use, we would set that issue behind us or aside and not allow or bring that back into controversy. The other aspect is once a condemnation has occurred, if there's going to be a partial easement petition, there would have to be at least 5 years between the condemnation and the time that the petition would be brought. The idea being, and someone had raised it, what about 6 months later, somebody bringing a petition? They may not have the project all fully developed, but it's going to happen. And so 5 years, as I worked with staff and thought about it, should be a more reasonable time before somebody would bring this type of a petition. And so. Any discussion on that? Otherwise, I'd like to move that so it's the way we just discussed it. All those in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Mr. Carlson, there's three testifiers. If there's that have asked to testify with concerns or opposition to this bill. Mr. Carlson, we'll start with you. I'm going to ask you to stick within 20 minutes together, so that means however you divide it, 5, 6, 7 minutes apiece.
Mr. Chairman.
Is that workable, Mr. Carlson?
That is it workable. We've agreed between the three of us how we'll proceed.
Okay, very good. Welcome to our committee. You also know the routine. Identify yourself for the record. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 13 of the state's larger counties. I do appear as being against this bill. Unfortunately, we believe this is applying a sledgehammer where fly swatter would be a more appropriate instrument. While it's meant to address the situation of one individual, a situation that's already being addressed in the course of negotiations that were encouraged by the chair as well as Representative Coonan, the bill, if enacted, as amended, will have general application that has the likelihood of endless litigation for the state and local road authorities. It will jeopardize the safety of Minnesotans, limit their access, including the access of the disabled, to convenient means of getting from place to place and to related recreational opportunities. It will make road maintenance and upkeep more difficult, and it will delay future planned road expansions and make them more costly. Now, the specific situation that exists is that this relates to Highway 29 heading north out of Alexandria, where it crosses a neck of land adjacent to Lake Lahamadu. The Department of Transportation acquired an easement to basically build the existing roadway back in the 50s from an owner that predates Mr. Larson, the subject of this bill, a number of times. At that time, the easement not only provided for the road, but also provided for a wayside. Over the years, because it was one of the few places where the public could get access to Lake Lahamadu, it became a de facto beach. And Douglas County approached the department and said, since this is in fact occurring, we would like to enter into a cooperative arrangement with you to operate this as a public beach. In addition to doing that, we will maintain the wayside. So this is exactly the sort of cooperative arrangement that I thought we were trying to encourage around here. Then subsequent to this, Mr. Larson acquired, I believe, an old motel that he has subsequently developed as a new property. He does not have convenient access to the lake for that. He has since built a walkway that basically encroaches upon this easement and has put a dock on that. He has purchased the underlying fee interest where this easement exists, and then has proceeded to litigate the issue all the way up to the Supreme Court. He has lost at every one of those venues. So now he's looking to the legislature for relief. As I said, again, because of the encouragement of the chair and Representative Coonan, negotiations are ongoing to try and come up with a remedy where possibly a trade may be facilitated, which will both preserve the interests of MnDOT as well as Mr. Larson. The fundamental issue here that's created by this bill, again, it's of general application. It doesn't speak to just this one situation, is that it says anytime an easement is acquired, and that easement may have been acquired 30, 40, 50 years ago, if the current owner of the underlying land who has fee in it contests or says that, well, it's not being used for the purposes for which it's acquired, even though he or she might not have actual knowledge of what the acquisition is for, they can come and litigate that and try and gain that back. Problem is, for these long ago acquired interests, cars, trucks were probably the only means of transportation. It did not identify what is the reality today, that frequently adjacent to the roadways for which the easement was originally acquired, these may be used for snowmobile trails, walkways, bikeways, paved paths for the handicapped, or for other vehicles that cannot legally operate on our highways. If those walkways, paths, trails have subsequently built, we're frankly creating a situation where individual come forward and say, well, this isn't what it was acquired for, and I want to have this easement vacated. As I said, literally miles and miles of right-of-way throughout the state are now used for snowmobile trails. Under this, those utilizations could exist. Shoulders throughout the Twin Cities metropolitan area are now used for express bus service, and in some cases for parking for those riders. That's true along the 35W corridor right now, will be in a matter of a year for Cedar Avenue, is contemplated along what's called the Botany right-of-way. Again, the individual could possibly make the case, well, this was just acquired for a roadway. It wasn't acquired for transit. And so, again, we'll face a situation where we may have it litigated that this isn't being used for the use and that the easement will be vacated. Cities in particular and other entities have used the easements for construction of sidewalks, bike paths, wheelchair paths. And again, we're faced with a situation that individual could say, well, this isn't what this was acquired for originally, and we'll litigate it to have the easement vacated. You can simply go right outside the doorway and see what the city of St. Paul has done and its efforts to affect the complete transportation concept, where they've dedicated a portion of their existing roadways for bikeways. Again, was that the use for which these easements were originally acquired? Or are we creating a situation where, once again, the fee owner of that easement can come forward and litigate to have the easement vacated? I'm going to let the other testifiers speak to the issues that are created for safety, because in a number of these instances, although not immediately obvious, These easements are acquired to improve the sight lines and safety, or to permit adequate room for ditching, snow plows, and so on. One final issue I will speak to is easements that were acquired years ago in contemplation of future roadway expansions. We do try and anticipate population growth and the need for new lanes, but those lanes may not be added for 15, 20, or even 25 years or longer because of the fiscal situation we've found ourselves in for the past number of years. Nevertheless, that's what they were acquired for, larger easements than what are necessary to serve the existing roadway. Again, you're placing us in a situation where we would face litigation over that easement's not being used. With that, I'll conclude and turn it over to the other testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Sandberg? And then Mr. Peterson would be last.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for having me. My name is Wayne Sandberg. I'm the County Highway Engineer for Washington County, Minnesota. I'm here representing the Minnesota County Engineers Association. Thanks for the opportunity today, and I'm here to oppose the bill as currently written. So this bill does propose to change the law to allow courts to discharge a portion of these easements. And that's a small change, but it has major impacts. In an attempt to remedy the one situation, Douglas County, like Keith said, this bill would have a ripple effect. We have over 45,000 miles of county highway in Minnesota. We estimate between 70 and 80% of those exist on easements. So we've got a significant number of miles that could come into play here. Now, it's important to remember that when these easements were acquired through the eminent domain process, they already have to go through a legal proceeding called a public purpose hearing. This is a proceeding that does happen in front of a judge. The agency has to prove that there is a public purpose to the condemnation. So this bill would require agencies to have to reprove that public purpose for these portions of the original easement. No matter the size, every single time an adjacent property owner believes that the original use is not being met. Many times these easements are very old, many times they're handwritten, and so they use terms that are general and can be hard to define and might be open to dispute. Sometimes the use is not even obvious to the adjacent landowner. We've got utilities in these easements. We have site corners for safety, future expansion width, our road drainage, ditches. All these are legitimate uses that would have to be reestablished legally if the property owner requests that discharge in court. One could envision public agencies continually in court establishing and reestablishing public purpose for our highway system at great expense. Now, it's also important to note that when it is appropriate, agencies already are relinquishing portions of these easements when we don't need them. This is done regularly, and there already is a process for this to occur. There is no benefit for road agencies to hold on to land that they are not using and does not serve a public purpose. It costs money for us to maintain it and manage it. We have liability if somebody gets hurt on this property. So whenever possible, we do already work with adjacent property owners to try to find win-win solutions when these situations do arise. Also note the provision for compensation back to the government in this current bill is not clear. The term fair and just is wide open to interpretation. This will further increase legal costs for us to figure this out and negotiate. So in conclusion, this bill will consume precious transportation dollars. Instead of building roads, we'll be paying for legal fees and attorneys to battle this out. And there already is a process that exists for adjacent landowners to achieve these goals with the road authority. So with that, I'll stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sandberg. I'll open it up for questions once Mr. Peterson's had a chance to comment. So thank you for coming, and we may have to call you back. Okay. Representative Peterson, Mr. Peterson, welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Peterson. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Department of Transportation, and I, too, am here to oppose this bill. You've heard most of my arguments already from the previous two testifiers, but I would just like to reiterate that there are several purposes that may not be immediately obvious to the adjacent landowners that actually do serve a transportation purpose, such as improving sight lines, creating a safety clear zone, snow storage, stormwater management, and things of that nature, in addition to the paved surface of the roadway. and actually establishing wayside rest areas and rest areas along our roadways also serves a significant safety purpose, giving drivers an opportunity to pull off the road and rest and avoiding some of the more hazardous driving areas that sometimes accompany fatigued drivers. Similar to what you just heard, a very large portion of the state highway system is established on easements. We estimate about 70% of the centerline miles of the trunk highway system is there by easement. That translates into about 17,000 frontage miles of land along our trunk highway system. Our opposition to this bill is based upon what we think, again, will be additional costs associated with court proceedings to defend existing easement boundaries or to reacquire right-of-way. We do have, on a regular basis, we do have discussions with adjacent landowners about appropriate boundaries, so we know that there's interest out there. We also have, on a regular basis, engaged in enforcement actions to try to enforce the boundaries of the easements for which the public has paid. As you also just heard, we regularly engage in a process which discharges or vacates a part of the easement when the department and the landowner agree that it is no longer needed for transportation purposes. This particular parcel which we're discussing was, as you also heard, was acquired several decades ago along Highway 29, and there's just been a traffic study completed up in the Alexandria area, and it now appears that at some point in the not-too-distant future, this will be converted to a four-lane highway, which will consume part of the current easement, and a significant portion of it will be dedicated to a stormwater sedimentation pond to protect the water quality in the lake. We have, as you heard too, this limited-use permit with Douglas County up there to allow more public enjoyment of the right-of-way that the public has already purchased, and we have actually several and many, if not the universal application of multiple use along our right-of-way. Utilities is a primary example. Again, utilities wasn't the primary purpose for which the right-of-way is acquired, but over succeeding years it's become apparent that it serves the public interest to route utilities along highway corridors. And so most trunk highways actually do have either electrical transmission lines or telecommunication lines or pipelines and things of that nature on or adjacent to the right-of-way. We are currently reevaluating the situation with this easement on this parcel up on Lake Lahamadu. And now that we have gotten a better idea about what the eventual shape of the highway improvement up there is likely to be and the quantity of stormwater detention that is going to be required as a result of that, we're reevaluating the extent of the easement that we have up there and hope to have an offer back to Mr. Larson that might help address the situation where he currently has an encroachment on our right-of-way up there. And I would just like to say that we do have other instances where we have multiple uses similar to this on the trunk highway system, and most of those are boat ramps, where we have a wayside rest along a lake, and we have found it in the public interest to also allow access to the lake by giving, allowing the DNR, for example, have a permit and put boat ramps in those locations. So with that, I'll also take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson, and Representative Lesh, and then Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Questions for Mr. Peterson. So I'm just seeing if I can understand this. So this guy, Mr. Larson, owns the land. The previous owner, you bought an easement on the land so you could put a road through, and he bought the land with knowledge of that easement on the title. After that, apparently it expanded to a beach, and he wanted to build a dock on the beach or a path out to the beach, and you're saying that that encroaches on your easement. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Peterson.
Representative Lesh. The beach area was acquired with the original easement. The encroachment that's currently occurring is to the southwest of the beach, as I understand it, or is not directly adjacent to the beach. It's but it's part of the current easement that the department has acquired.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And this is what I, by way of comment, Mr. Chair, this is what I don't understand. I mean, as a person who has had to deal with government, you know, we passed an eminent domain bill a few years back in order to deal with this kind of thing because property owners, it's you can't fight City Hall, of course. It's really difficult. And in cases with condemnations, it's horrible. The government's got you by the short hairs. So in this case, you know, you try to deal with him fairly. Well, it's still his land. You got an easement on it for the use of the highway, and he just wants to build a dock out onto his land for which you have an easement to do something else. I don't understand why he's having the headache as he is of having to deal with this. And I think probably that Representative Coonan's bill, maybe it's a Hail Mary pass, I don't know, because the courts are doing something different, but I would absolutely support it, and I would think that Mr. Larson, I could understand his frustration. As a bona fide purchaser of the property after this, when all of a sudden it turns into a beach, and he's like, well, he's not objecting to the beach. You could have put a fence up to keep it from becoming a beach or expanding beyond its original use, but you didn't. And so he just wants to partake of the same use and put a, and he didn't object to that at the time. It went beyond the use. But then when he tries to use it the same way that essentially government did, oh, no, you can't do that. You're encroaching on our easement, when he didn't object to it when it expanded and turned it into a beach. So I think it's just a basic fairness issue, and I'd support the bill, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Representative Lesh. To fill that in a little, Representative Lesh, the attorney that at least one of them that Mr. Larson's used is also a constituent of mine. And what I understand, and Representative Coonan, maybe you can clarify this, the courts basically looked at the statute and said, we don't have the right to discharge a partial easement. Being they've used part of this land, we can't discharge it. And so that's the crux of the matter. Am I correct, Representative Coonan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's right. The statement was made here that Mr. Larson lost his case in court. That's not true. He never got his case in court. When the courts looked at statute and saw that they couldn't hear cases of dismissing of a partial easement, they just didn't hear the case, and so it ended at that point. So that's exactly right.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a comment for Mr. Sandberg.
Mr. Sandberg, do you want to come back? Go ahead, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Sandberg. You had testified that land has been returned to property owners. Do you know how much land has been returned in the last couple years from the state back to private property owners?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not know right now sitting here how much land. We could get that information for you. I know in Washington County it is very common for developers, adjacent property owners to ask us to work with them, and we do this regularly.
And then, Mr.
Representative Grunhagen.
You had indicated that there was some type of authority, and I know your time was short, and I missed the for them to already make this appeal. Would you elaborate on that a little bit?
Mr. Chair, Representative, for a local road, their authority or the process would be to petition the county board or the city council. So they already have that process in play. And like I said, our intention as a road authority is never to hold land that we don't need. The concern here is that it may not always be clear what we're holding it for, and then you end up in the court reestablishing this repeatedly.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen, follow up.
Oh, I just say that, one of the bedrocks, my own belief system, one of the bedrocks of our republic is private property rights. And I think it's also one of the bedrocks of our prosperity in our country. So if I'm going to err, I'd like to err on the side of the private property owner versus the government. But based on the testimony that I heard from the testifiers, it sounds like this is a full employment bill for lawyers. And, I just make this comment is that, sometimes on these bills, when opposition testifies to certain bills in general, it seems like the sky is falling type testimony. And I just, have faith in a certain amount of property owners that this isn't going to degenerate into something that was stated here, where you're just going to have multiple claims against the state, especially if the state is demonstrating some type of use for that land in the future. So do you think your testimony was a little bit embellished in just to the testifiers in general in terms of the litigation that's going to come out of this type of bill?
Mr. Sandberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely I do not believe that it was embellished. Encroachment in public rights of way is a common issue, whether it's agricultural, growing crops in the right of way, illegal placement of signs. And so we are continually working with our communities and our neighbors to try to keep these rights of ways clear, not only for, like I said, I mentioned utilities and safety site corners, also if you run off the road, vegetation and things like that. And so what we would expect that might happen would be is that these folks would then petition us to relinquish that. And so that's one of the concerns. I think back, and I wanted to mention one other point that you brought up too was when we actually go through an eminent domain proceeding, I wanted to make sure it's clear that we have to establish public purpose of what we're taking. We can't just walk in and say we're taking someone's land. We have to go through a legal proceeding to establish that taking it, it does serve a public purpose. So that's the opportunity when we talk about private property rights to have that first discussion.
One last question.
Representative Grunhagen.
Does the return of this land in any way diminish access to the beach, do you know of? That's, anybody can respond to that.
I'll maybe respond to Representative Coonan if you want. The intent is not, Representative Grunhagen. That's why I wanted the amendment language from House that our House Counsel drafted. We're basically saying that issue is going to be resolved either way. We're not going to let them litigate that issue, and Mr. Larson has indicated that's not his intent either. So, Mr. Representative Coonan, if you have anything else to add to that.
No, Mr. Chairman, and what you said is the way I understand Mr. Larson, too, that he does not intend to take the beach.
Representative Holberg, then Hillstrom, then Lesh.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Coonan, I think some valid points have been raised today, but I think that there should be an opportunity to discharge a portion of an easement. I'm a little concerned. I don't like what happened in this situation and that there was an easement for a road that turned into a public beach. I just think it's a matter of circumstances that shouldn't be replicated. And if there's a way to fix your bill so that government has to define the parameters of the use, you know, and not, I mean, it just seems wrong that for a public purpose that they should define those purposes, and maybe your bill should be moving forward or whatever, or set out. I mean, I think there's something to work with here. You know, I think it should be on the backs of government to clearly define the parameters of what they're going to use this for and so that the payment's appropriate, et cetera. But I do think that the opposition to your bill, you know, has some valid concerns, and that because we would change part of the game plan, if you will, by allowing for this, but prior to this, they didn't have to be so specific in outlining the ranges of public use when they got the original easements. I think that there is some risk to the taxpayers as a whole. I mean, we have to remember that government is the taxpayer too when paying to litigate these. So I would ask you as you move forward with this to try and see if you can work with the interested parties that if we're going to lay out a new scheme moving forward, that they have certain standards that protect the taxpayer from unnecessary litigation costs, but more importantly, make the government think ahead of, you know, what the uses will be, and so the remuneration to the property owners is fair as well. I mean, laying out an easement for road purposes that turns into a public beach just doesn't seem right, even no matter what the time frame is.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coon, is it your intention that should your issue resolve that you would continue with this legislation between now and the end of session, or if your issue resolves, do you intend to pull the bill between now and the end?
Representative Coonan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, when you say your issue, are you talking about Mr. Larson specifically?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coonan.
To answer that question, I would say that I would probably continue, but I'm sure open to ideas and like, the ideas of, trying to set the parameters of the use ahead of time. I like that. I wasn't quite sure how to do it, so it's not in the bill, but it's a good idea. And I think, too, everybody needs to remember that the concerns that were brought up by the testifiers are legitimate. I'm not saying they're not legitimate. What the bill does is allow the landowner to petition the district court, and the court would hear all those arguments, and they would hear the concerns. And I have to add that I don't think this would turn into a free-for-all where everybody would be running to court, because after a few cases, everybody involved in the legal system would start to know what the courts would decide, and I don't think it would be a free-for-all at that point.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Coonan, the only reason why I'm asking is because I can envision you build a road or you build a high-rise center or something, and then you have to do a stormwater retention pond, right? And so you know that you've got enough easement to do your property and to then build the required stormwater retention pond. Well, all of a sudden now you've got this stormwater retention pond and you can either make it look nice or not make it look nice, right? So maybe you think you want to put in walking paths or you let somebody build a golf course. And so you had to acquire the property to meet the needs and the standards, but it has been expanded, just as in the case with the beach here, right? They wanted it for one purpose and then it got expanded for another. So just keep in mind that there are some other purposes that government sometimes, that we require them to do, and then we have to think about what the consequences are as this bill moves forward.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. And, Representative Lesh, but let me just, to Representative Hillstrom's question, Representative Coonan, do you know the status of this in the Senate? And I was thinking it's actually on the Senate floor already. Is that, do you know?
The last I've heard that it's in the Transportation Committee right now.
Okay.
That's the last I've heard. I may not be up to speed.
But okay. It might have been referred back after session, but okay. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have another question for Mr. Peterson and any of the government types.
Go ahead.
If government wants to build a road or wants some land, are you really limited for specific purposes, or is there another way for you to acquire that land where you could have carte blanche control to do whatever you wanted?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, in recent years, our practice, whenever possible, is to acquire the land in fee. So we use the easement approach less and less whenever the situation is conducive to that. We just simply acquire the land.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chair, the reason I ask it is I just, all this conversation, it seems to be a better policy in which they're moving toward, but also that was an option when they originally acquired this land, to purchase the land in fee, where they could do whatever they want and they wouldn't have to litigate anything. But I'm sure it was probably cheaper to just buy an easement. But that's the risk you take. You think, oh, we're just going to need a road. And then decades down the road, government decides, well, we've got to put utilities along. Okay. Well, purchase the land in fee then, rather than having to go on the cheap and do easements. So that's just my comment, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Pelty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did we adopt the A5 amendment?
We did, Representative Pelty.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, it seems to me the tenor of the conversation here is that probably the committee is pretty much in sympathy with Representative Coonan's attempt to deal with this specific instance and with your attempt as well, Mr. Chair, and the problem being that the bill as it's drafted is overbroad, and I'm wondering if maybe the author would be willing to consider, being that the bill has been amended in such a way as it would deal with this specific problem, we just deleted section 1 of the bill, which doesn't seem to me to be necessary in order to deal with this particular problem at this point.
Mm-hmm. Representative Coonan, your comments on Representative Hilty and
Mr. Chairman, at this point, I would be opposed to that. I'm not going to say the bill might not, you know, could use some work, but I would be opposed to just eliminating that section.
And Representative Hilty, it is going to the Transportation Committee. It does sound like the department has maybe renewed seriousness in looking at this area. Hopefully that would expedite itself. But I think there's a generally good public policy that Representative Coonan, through his constituent, has brought us. And while it seems like it's focused on one area that some would say is maybe a no-brainer, I think there's a general good public policy here that's worth discussing. But as to Section 1, I'll leave that up to the author, and I just tell you it is going to transportation, so maybe it's something he could look at in between here and there.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just
Representative Hilty.
Just threw that out as a possibility. Sure. I don't intend to move that amendment, but I do think that it would be good for the author of the bill, if he wants ultimately to succeed, to be thinking in terms of how to narrow this in light of the testimony that we've had here.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Coonan, in light of the testimony today, 666, I think, was when this particular easement was taken. Is that 50 years ago? You know, did they handwrite it or did they type it out? And if it was 75 or 100 years ago, did they just say, we're taking this section and didn't do anything more in terms of what the need was? Because back then, things were a little bit faster in government. You know, I have real difficulties with what you're going to do to our highway department, to our courts division, and at the end of the day, to the taxpayers. I would wholeheartedly support what Representative Holberg, my classmate, actually, talked about. This is going forward, maybe, yes. So it kind of puts the onus on the road engineers and the transportation. But to continue to go back and go back and go back, you're opening up a box that would be very hard to close. So, I mean, in its present form, I'm probably against your bill. But I think if you amend it to go forward, I could probably support it. And that's just a comment, Mr. Chair, not a question.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To anybody who might want to respond, you know, if I like Section 1, should this bill go forward and be enacted into law, and for whatever, you know, examples might exist out there where there is a partial easement that is discharged, should the government decide or come forward and prove a need in the future that maybe didn't exist before or wasn't clear before, is there any reason they couldn't go forward and come up with another easement through the normal process?
Who's that for? Mr. Peterson? Or what? Any of you that want to answer?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think the answer to your question is no. There's nothing that would stop a government agency from trying to renegotiate another easement or reestablish public purpose. The concern here isn't primarily focused on a case like that. It's more so if the adjacent property owner doesn't know what the purpose is, this bill directs them to go to court and bring us with them, and we have to battle it out there versus having the discussion outside of that way and working with the city council or the county board to determine, is there still a use or not? And again, I mentioned drainage and other things that may not look like a road, but those are certainly part of the transportation system.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Druskowski.
Well, Mr. Sandberg, you know, I mean, practically, that landowner realizes that access to the court is very expensive. They're going to come and talk to you first, and then they're going to talk to the county board, or they're going to talk to the department, depending on who it is. The wisdom of that department or that county board or you is going to be shared with them at that point. They're going to know what their rights are. They're going to know what those access costs to the legal system amount to. I don't think your concerns are as well founded maybe as you projected them to be.
No further questions. We'll take a vote on your bill as amended, Representative Coonan. Hopefully you and the department and Mr. Larson on this matter particularly can move swiftly and maybe find resolution that makes sense. He doesn't have to use this new provision if we would pass it, but as amended, the chair will renew the motion for House File 578 to be recommended to pass to the Transportation Committee as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Swazinski, we're back. We'll bring back up House File 2333 for approval and placement on the general register. Representative Lesh moves the A2 amendment as drafted by Mr. Gehring during committee here. So, Representative Lesh, you want to move that amendment?
Yes, I would move it. By way of explanation, Mr. Chair, it just takes that original language out of parens 1 and adds it to a separate parens 18, leaving the bill effects unchanged.
Representative Swazinski, any comment on the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I support the amendment, and I would ask you to please include it in the bill.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye for the A2 amendment.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Back to the bill. Back to the bill. Is there any questions or anybody in the audience that wants to testify for or against this bill? Having no questions, Representative Swazinski, the chair will renew his motion to pass House File 2333 to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. All right. Thank you, Representative Swazinski. And members, our meeting is adjourned.